Both of these readings are extraordinary. I love this reading of Elijah. You know, that God had sent this drought on the entire state of Israel, and Elijah is in a pagan town with this widow staying there, and then she says, she accuses him of being the reason that her son has died because of this drought, I think. And so Elijah goes up and, you know, he has a real relationship with God. He says, are you even going to kill this young man? You know, he just goes right to the heart of the thing. And that's how he begins his prayer, with the real cry of how things really are in my life. Then he acknowledges that the Lord, as he continues his prayer and the Lord brings this child back to life. In the gospel, obviously these two are placed together, so we'll see the echo between the Old Testament of Elijah and the Lord. And the Lord is walking and talking. This is the way he normally taught, not just sitting and teaching, but he would be slowly talking with these followers, not just the 12, but many others are going along with him. He's coming to this city of Nain. And here in this place, he just happens to run across a funeral procession. It used to be that sometimes the police we'd have this long procession out to Belcrest, and this, I don't think that Salem allows that anymore. But one time we had one that was so long it made the newspaper the next day because it tied up traffic during rush hour. Long line of cars, and you know these things with the lights on, and it always gets people's attention. And this is kind of like that, except that the young man would have been in kind of a stretcher, like the paralyzed man in another gospel that's being let down through the roof. This young man would have been out in the open so everyone could see him, and just strapped down, not in a coffin. So they had a chance to look at him, and this crowd would be following. They'd have people paid to weep, not because people weren't grieving, but it was something that one did in that culture. Some people had paid to wail out loud, and they'd wail all night long. And so you have all these people wailing, and here comes a widow, and nobody would touch the casket or it's called a funeral bier. They wouldn't touch this thing because it would make them impure. But they're all standing off to the side, and she's in hot water, this woman, because in that culture there was no social security whatsoever. Your social security is your family. She's a widow, so she's lost her husband. That's one security she's lost. Now she's lost her only son, and he's a young man, so she's a relatively young woman still herself. It's not unlike what is going to happen to Mary at the cross, isn't it? Where she has nobody. She's lost her husband, Joseph, and now she's going to lose her only son, Jesus. And Jesus, is one of his last acts on the cross is to give his mother to John, who fortuitously is at the foot of the cross and receives his mother to care for her. So this woman has nobody. And this dramatic procession is going by, and the first question I had in looking at that is this a coincidence, or has Jesus foreseen this? And we ask ourselves, when God acts in my life, sometimes we think things are happening just, you know, one thing after the other, and yet you look back at it and realize God was there. So we don't know. Jesus, as a human being, is taking life as it comes. As God, sometimes he has the knowledge and the ability that God gives him, though while on earth it was limited by his human brain, to see ahead and perhaps use this as a teaching ability. We don't know which it is, but in any case, he encounters this woman and her now newly deceased son and all these wailers. And the Lord is very grieved as he looks at this, like anybody would. Now, this is God himself, who has taken a human body. He's looking through our eyes. He's in our world, visible. And he sees in this scene, you see the whole human condition in one sweep, is that something tragic has happened, and God is always moved. But now we can actually see his reaction to this. This is not his plan. It's not what he wanted for our lives. This is the result of sin, and something that we don't quite understand is why the world is the way it is without its full knowledge of God. And he grieves over this. As we see in a number of places, our Lord is deeply moved by these things. He's always moved when somebody has troubles in their lives, We don't always see him, but the Lord is always standing there, always with us, always waiting. And he says to this widow, stop, stop, do not grieve. And then he does something very dramatic. He touches this coffin, this open coffin. In doing so, he immediately incurs ritual impurity for a week. This is, I don't believe that's an accident. Our Lord, whenever he comes into our lives, is willing to take all of our burdens on himself. This is particularly true in the sacrament of confession, where the priest will put out his hand in the absolution, which is our Lord speaking, and will take that burden of sin, the Lord will, on himself. And the same is true with communion. He gives us his body and blood. It's not the priest's hand or the Eucharistic minister's hand. It's the Lord giving it to us, and so on. Baptism, it's the Lord's hands. And he takes away the sin in baptism of our human condition. He wants to take it on himself, but he must be invited in. Now, this was an accidental thing, but the woman is open to him. She stops. She's willing to accept his offer of grief. And he offers to her, do not grieve. And she stops, probably puzzled. Who is this man? Why is he saying this to me? Of course, she's filled with grief. So before he raises this individual, he shares her grief. And another question that one has about this extraordinary gospel is, our Lord appears to wait until after the death to raise him from the dead. Perhaps he could have healed this young man before he died. So God often waits until it seems to be too late and then acts in a dramatic way. That is God's signature, is that he doesn't give us, sometimes he will wait until the very end, because what he's doing is growing our faith. We only have this world in which our faith to grow. Without that, we have nothing. So our Lord shares these trials with us. He doesn't explain why these things happen, these tragedies or these difficulties that we face. But he tells us with this, as well as the cross, of course, that he shares our human condition. He knows our grief. He resonates with it, and in his person, he lets us know that this was not his original plan, but he's working it to good. This is something she's going through, and he's going to share it. And then he's going to rise from the dead, so there's going to be a good outcome to this at the end. And so we have the same parade happens in all of our lives quite frequently. We have one challenge after the other, and our Lord is one of the crowd, and we find him coming out of the crowd and taking on himself this entire situation, but he needs to be invited in. We'll find his hand is there in the midst of this. So we're invited then into this ourselves, into this gospel that Jesus wishes to, and we will encounter him on the journey like this in places we're not expecting, where he'll put out his hand and touch our human condition, take it on himself, and say, I am with you, don't grieve, I'm going to take the situation and raise you from the dead.